I do want to mention before I get started that we still do have some breakfasty things back there, and there are still some danishes and stuff, and there's still some Worms donuts. So after the service, if you would go back and finish them off, that would be really helpful to us. Nobody injure each other, but if you would finish them off for us, that'd be great. What's that, Jim? Oh, children's church. You're dismissed if you can go back. Sorry, children. I robbed you some of your time. Yeah, I was preoccupied. Well, thank you for adjusting today. We really debated about whether or not to have it outside, and so, but we just didn't want to plan all that and then have it rain on us, and then we didn't want to. Don Ambers always graciously offers his sound equipment, and we didn't want that to be out there and potentially get rained on and stuff. So, in any case. We're going to spend some time on a biblical view of family. Next Sunday, I'm going to be talking about Father's Day. But today, I'm sort of going to give you an overview of, and there's a lot more that could be said than what I'm going to say today, but I'm going to give you an overview of what it means to honor our parents and what's involved in terms of from young children to younger parents to adult children, to older parents or elderly parents, because you have those two dynamics, both of which involve honoring their parents. And so we're going to be talking about that. So I have a little quote for you before I begin. See if you know where this came from. The children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders and love to chatter in places where they exercise. Children are now tyrants, not the servants of their households. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents. They talk in front of company. They eat up all the nice things at the table, and they tyrannize their teachers. Do you know who wrote that? Anyone want to guess? Socrates, about 400 years before the birth of Christ. So, nothing new under the sun, is there, huh? So, in any case, I thought you would, you know. So this thing where you know, oftentimes there's this perception of how children disrespect adults or their parents, it's been around since the dawn of time. And just because it's been around since the dawn of time doesn't mean that it's a good thing, right? It just means that it's just one of those reoccurring things that we all have to struggle with and contend with. Yeah, Frank?
It seems to me, though, that you don't know that, though, until you're old. It takes you being old to know that the young ones are disrespectful.
No, that's true. Because we were never disrespectful, right? Yeah. So it skipped a generation. It all skipped a generation. So that's true. That's exactly right. And by the way, I'll just be honest with you. So I showed up this morning at my office to work on my message. And so the files that I had were gone. So what I have here is about an hour and a half or so. And I hope that's good enough. And you know, I was sweating bullets there for a little bit, but I thought, hey, you just got to go with the flow. So here we are. But having said that, I really do want, because I am talking about something where I can't begin to anticipate anything that you might be thinking or a way in which this might apply to your life. I want you to feel free to do what Frank did and ask some questions, raise your hands, because as I said to you before, healthy families are an endangered species right now, I think, in our culture. A biblical view of what a family is an endangered species in our culture. And so it's something that deserves time and discussion, reflection, and study more than what we've been doing, probably. So Frank read the call to worship. And I want to begin by saying, and I had to read this call to worship because it seemed to me that we need to begin with this whole premise. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies at the gate. And so I just want to sort of unpack this for a few minutes here. Behold, the children are a heritage from the Lord. They are a blessing. They are an enduring thing. The fruit of the womb, a reward. So there's this image as fruit of the womb, that where it's this idea of abundance and richness and deliciousness and goodness. And that's sort of what's being carried with that metaphor, the fruit of the womb. And so our first impulse then is to think, as a relatively young adults, we're thinking about young children. And we think about our children in that way, that they're a blessing. Although that's highly questionable when a baby's crying late into the night and you get up to attend to them and you step on a Duplo and you're barefoot. Then you're wondering just how much of a blessing they might be, right? So as you're hopping on one foot into the room, seeing what's going on, you have to remind yourself that this is a blessing and not a curse. So in any case, but as relatively young adults thinking, or, you know, reminding ourselves that our children are a blessing, do our parents say about us that we have been a blessing or are a blessing to them? So I know Al and Bev, before too long, were thinking about moving back out to California because your mom has initial stages of Alzheimer's, right? Beginning stages of Alzheimer's. And so you want to be there to be a blessing. You want to be there to honor. And you think, many of you might be thinking, well, that's a no-brainer. I'm telling you, as a pastor, it is not a no-brainer. For many people, it is not a burner. I've talked to more than one funeral director while I'm riding in the front seat with him, and I just sort of pick his brain a little bit. And, you know, just to see how kids act during times like when they lose their parents. And they have said to me, he said, I am driving the coffin to the cemetery, and they are behind me arguing and fighting about who got what and why. That's not honoring your parents. So there's this two-stage thing here that we need to keep in mind. That, and I can tell you with my own mom, I mean, it was, as she went through her small cell lung cancer, I was always trying to figure out, how much control do I take of her life for her benefit versus taking too much control that would rob her of her dignity. Very simple things like she would want to take her jewelry to a skilled nursing facility. And I would say, Mom, I know you want that, but I'm saying to you that if you take these things, they are going to disappear. One of the residents will take them, or someone who works there will take them. And by the way, I'm just telling you as a pastor, it happens all the time. And so I'd have to work through with her about what jewelry she could take, you know, and just sort of ride the margin there so that she still felt like she had something that was substantial that she enjoyed on one hand, and yet on the other hand, that if she lost it, it wouldn't be a huge thing. So as adults, we have this biblical commandment to be a blessing to our parents. I'll give you another example. I don't know that I can get through this entire sermon today. So maybe I'll have to, but I want to try and give you some practical examples if I can, all right? So when you marry another person, and one or either of you have other family members who may have some physical disabilities, you need to have that discussion before you get married about how and who, whose responsibility is to take care of those people. Because you can't get married and assume that if something happens, that you're going to take a sibling in who has some kind of disability, or a parent or whatever, but the other spouse is not assuming that, because they're assuming that they're going to do that with their parents. They're certainly not going to do it with both. You need to have that discussion, because there are a lot of parents who are horribly dishonored when that married couple have this debate about who goes where and who does what and all those kinds of things. Does this make sense to you? Your parents should not be subject to that. You should be mature enough to have that discussion with your spouse as much as you can before any of that happens. So I've seen that. And you think, well, parents should have enough money to retire on properly. Parents should have, look, there are no guarantees in life other than death and taxes, right? Amen. That's it. And so there are a lot of things that you think maybe should be settled now, and maybe parents in good conscience try to settle that now. But I know in 2008, I know people who lost half or three quarters of their retirement. So they planned, they prepared, and something happened, and then now they're working at Walmart. So I want to say that the prevailing question for a young adult or young adults who have children is to remind yourselves that children really are a blessing. I know a woman who said to my wife recently, to her own kids, whatever you do, do not have children. She lost one, and because she lost one, she wants to assume she just doesn't want her children to go through that kind of pain herself, just in case. But you have other children. Have they not been a blessing to you? Has the loss of this one child superseded the blessing of all these other children brought to you in your life? Do you not think that's out of balance? Yeah, Ruth. She says that to her students.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, as adults, then it's important for us to remind ourselves about what a blessing. I don't know about you, but we can still remember our boys when they were little, and just watching the back of their little heads, and kissing that head, and holding them, and you never forget the feeling of them just sort of hanging on here and burying their head in your neck right here. You never forget that. Sometimes I live vicariously. I'll grab one of your kids, and I'll just hold them there, you know. Hold, stay there, you know. But I, you know, because I remember that, and it's such a great feeling. So like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. So there's all like this military language, and it's intended that way. And it was intended that way in its culture, and it has its application today. So every time I took my mom if she went into skilled nursing for a while, or if she talked to the lawyer that was related to elderly care, whatever, every time they would say, now, are you being threatened at home? Has anyone been abusing you? Are you being verbally abused? Every time. Because abuse of elders is prevalent within our culture. And so it's the role of a child to protect their elderly parents. And maybe not even so elderly. Because I can tell you right now, if somebody did something to me or to Ruth, both of my boys, it would just not be a pretty sight, because they are very protective of us. So we do have to protect our parents. And so like arrows in the quiver of a warrior. In other words, there's a lethality here, okay? There's a lethality here about how you're supposed to protect And I've shared a little bit with you that, you know, that there was some stuff going on in my family that, that in essence was abusive to my mother. And I got involved. A lot. And legally. And verbally. I got involved. You do not have permission to do this to my mom. Or my dad. Can't do it. And so there's a certain sense in which if our parents are fragile or they are in a vulnerable state, then it's our responsibility to come alongside them and to protect them. That's what's meant there. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies at the gate. In other words, his enemies know that when he speaks, and that's where they did all the transactions and the business at the gate of the city, and that's where if there was any gossiping, any discussion, anything that went on in the town, it happened at that city gate. And so the discussion would be, don't mess with him because he has these kids and you don't want to mess with them. That was the understanding. Okay? And so I'm spending a little time on this because the perception is always on, you know, young parents to young children, and that's important, but we need to spend a little more time, especially now that I'm getting older, on older parents with elderly parents. That has to happen. So, yes?
That passage also, being the mother of five children, refers to you wouldn't want to go into battle with just one arrow in your quiver.
Next to that.
And back in the agrarian society, you had a lot of children to help with the farm or whatever.
Yep.
And nowadays, if you have 1.6 children, that's acceptable.
Yeah.
But if you have any more than the different kinds that they have, which changes with our culture, you have, too many.
Yeah.
And we have cultures like China where they get rid of if you only allowed one.
Especially girls.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I think that that's something that's important to realize too.
Yeah.
There are godly parents that have chosen to allow God to decide how many children. At least they don't just have one or two, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that we don't have choices in these matters, and I know that. But I do think that it really did mean literally that they are a blessing. And the more arrows in your quiver, the more you can stand and fight and have somebody that's got your back.
Exactly. No, it's exactly right. And not even just in terms of that, but just like, look, you know, sometimes your elderly parents are, they can still be at home, but they need help. And the more kids you have around that can help, the longer you can stay in the home. It's pretty simple. If any of you visit people in some of the skilled nursing centers, look, I'm just telling you, if I end up at the Greenbrier in Ambridge, I'm going to be in escape risk. I'm just telling you right now, okay? I'll probably be on the news somehow, but... Yeah, Marianne?
I'll help you escape.
You'll help me escape? Thank you, Marianne. And it's not that that's a bad place. It's just not where I want to be, you know? I've said to Ruth, you know, look, if I'm older and I'm out hunting and I have a heart attack and die, just dig a grave and throw me in. Now I'll be fine, really. I'll be fine. She doesn't like that idea, but I don't know if it's rather the digging part or what, but she, you know. Anyway, so here we go. Look, when we choose to have children, all other desires and commitments must be either modified or suspended if they would compromise the well-being of our children. When you choose to have a child. So, let's say you have a doctor, and you go to the emergency room, and your doctor shows up at the emergency room, and you are in a stage where you're not... Your death isn't imminent, but unless some things happen pretty soon, you're probably going to die. You know this. Your doctor knows this. And so you want to be treated so that you can live. You want to receive all the different kinds of care that you need. And as the doctor is in the presence with you, in the room with you, he suddenly gets some texts. And he starts responding to his texts. You're like, I'm here, right? Or maybe he thinks, I haven't seen this YouTube thing that I've been wanting to see. I'm going to, watch this YouTube file for a while. Or somebody comes by and says, hey, Doc, it's so-and-so's birthday. Have some cake, you know. Wouldn't you be offended by that? Because his job is to treat you, or her job is to treat you and to save your life so that you can live well beyond that time. If you're a parent, your job is to take care of your kids and to be present and to not be so distracted by your own desires and wants and things like that that you can't do your job.
Even if your job is Jesus?
Yes, that's right. Even if your job is just Jesus, like being a pastor. That's exactly right. Look, in the Alliance at one time, there were pastors, missionaries, who would say to missionaries and to pastors, you take care of God's church and he will take care of your kids. And guess what happened? It didn't happen that way.
Amen.
There was a tremendous amount of damage based on that thought. Because you know what? Your job is your family, as well as your church. It's not biblical. It's exactly right. So I'm a little adamant about this because I was a pastor or youth pastor for 16 years. And I would have parents who would come into my office. And they would say to me, and they would want me to counsel their kid. And as they're talking to me about the issues related to their kid, I knew some of the issues because I'd talked to their kids or I had observed certain things. And I observed a parent who made a lot of choices over the course of their life as a parent that would lead to the destruction of their kid. And they would want me to fix them in one or two sessions. I'm like, there's a whole lot more going on here. So we have to restore again the biblical mandate and commitment that parents need to have for their children. It has to be restored. I mean, just to pick up a little bit on Beth's comment, in our culture today, to have more than two kids is considered to be irresponsible. There's a prevailing thought that it's irresponsible to have more than two kids because you can't give them everything they need because they consume too much in the way of resources and things like that. I mean, it's all that kind of stuff. Yeah, Beth, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I'm just going to say to the young parents that a lot of times they want that responsibility of parenting to go to the pastor or possibly to their own parents.
Yeah.
Because they want the house,
yeah.
They want the stuff,
yeah.
And they want to be able to also give it to the kids, but they don't want to make the sacrifice that maybe the stuff's going to have to wait, but it's not fair to have your parents raise your children while you get the stuff.
Yeah.
I talk to so many grandparents that are raising their grandchildren, and the little darlings are oblivious.
Yep.
Not fair.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Yeah. And
but
so
grandparents are kind of what's that fancy word? They're allowing their children to use them
enabling, yeah.
Enabling, exactly. Yeah.
So there are some situations where both parents have to work, there's nothing you can do about it. I mean to provide the basics and things like that. There are always those situations.
Amen.
But then there are others, as Bev was talking about here, where people because their values tend to be lean a little bit more materialistically on things than they may impose upon their parents in some ways. And sometimes those parents want to be imposed upon in that way, but that doesn't mean it's still a good thing.
Amen.
I mean, because you're primarily responsible for your kids, you know. And so as long as, and I think this is a rule of thumb, as long as we as parents are attending to our children and providing for them in every way, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, all that kind of stuff, materially, then add on whatever you want to add on. But those have to be our primary responsibilities as parents in the lives of our kids. So, in like manner, when we have parents, we are obligated to provide and to care for them as if they were our children. In like manner, we are obligated to provide and to care for our parents as if they were our children. You know that famous story about Irma Bombeck, don't you? So I'm dating myself again by using Irma Bombeck, but she was a writer, speaker, a Christian writer, speaker from years ago. But she talks about how when she was a little girl, riding in a car with her mother when they didn't have or use seat belts. So we're probably talking about back in the 50s. And I didn't use seatbelts either. I'm still alive. So that's, you know, many of us are. But I also rode in the back of a truck many, many times as well. So hay wagons. I mean, I lived a dangerous life. But so anyway, she's riding in the car with Irma Bombeck is a little girl. She's riding in the car with her mother. And they come up to a road, and somebody runs a stop sign, and she jams on the brakes, and she puts her hand out in front of her daughter like this to keep her from going into the dashboard and smashing her face.
Those cars didn't have seatbelts.
Yeah, those cars didn't have seatbelts, that's right. So then Irma goes on to say that later on in life, when she's driving, she has her daughter, same kind of situation. She has to jam on the brakes, and her daughter is in the front seat, and she puts her arm out to keep her from hitting the dashboard. And then later on in life, she's riding with her daughter. Her daughter's driving, and her daughter jams on the brakes, and her daughter puts her hand out in front of her mother to keep Irma from hitting the dashboard. That's the cycle of life.
Amen.
That's how it is. That's how it ought to be. So we have this responsibility then to be that way. And by the way, let me just say this too, in as much as this is possible, I can tell you honestly that I loved my in-laws. I cared for Judy and George very much. I can remember a time when probably a year or two before Judy passed away, she came to visit us, and she just really wanted to demonstrate that she was still independent and she could still take care of herself. And she was coming down our steps. We have 13 steps from our second floor down to our main floor, which is one reason why we're moving, because of the steps. Because one of us is going to end up at the bottom of a heap at some point. But in any case, about the second or third step from the bottom, she just misread the step. And she tumbled and fell at the bottom of the steps. And she's just in a heap at the bottom. And I just felt so badly. I was right there, sitting on the couch. She didn't get hurt, but she started to cry. And she thought, I was doing so well. I know I was just doing so well. And she was embarrassed because she had failed to demonstrate her independence and her ability to take care of herself. Well, as a son-in-law, I still have a responsibility to her. And to George. It's kind of a funny story about George. George had Alzheimer's. And Judy wanted to go out and visit her son out in Colorado Springs. So she asked if we would watch George. And we said yes. And he was pretty advanced. It was a few months before he went into skilled nursing. And so he stayed in my son's bedroom, and we, of course, stayed in ours. And in the middle of the night, in the pitch blackness, somebody's walking beside my bed, you know, right beside me. And I wake up, and I said, "George, is that you?" He said, "Yep." I said, "What are you doing, George?" He said, "I'm looking for the Tinkle Shack." I said, "Well, it ain't in here, you know." So, you know, I had to direct him. You know, that's all I needed to wake up to was something like that. But I want to say that's a circumstance where some in-laws would be angry, right, and would be frustrated. But you can't, I understand a certain level of frustration, but you still have to care for them and nurture them in a way that's respectful and dignified. So here are some other dynamics that are related to raising children in light of what we've been talking about. Extended family related to grandparents, aunts, and uncles. As a rule of thumb, grandparents, aunts, and uncles should follow the way in which their children are raised, are being raised. If I have a child, I would want my mother or mother-in-law or aunt or uncle to abide by the policies, the rules that we have for our children. Now, there are always exceptions. But as a rule of thumb, I think that's important. I would not want, so we had a relative who was pretty racist. And he tried to convey that to my oldest son, Jeremiah. And I said to him, we do not do that here. Those are not our values. Those are not our rules. And I don't want you conveying that to my son. Sometimes it has to do with, you know, just sort of everyday things like how often to feed or whatever. But your child, but bottom line, there has to be some unanimity, some agreement between the primary parents and the extended family about how to care for the values that you have, those kinds of things. You can't have grandparents or aunts and uncles undermining parents as they raise their kids in a good and healthy way. You can't have that. And you, especially in when it comes to faith, you can't have grandparents who may not be believers undermining the believing faith and values of their children and their grandchildren. Can't do that. And so sometimes you have to set up some boundaries. I remember there was a park there, at the park in Ambridge. There was some concert going on for children. And, you know, I mean, these are grade school kids. And this fight broke out among a group of parents. And here, it was this aunt who did not have children, who lived vicariously through her sister and her sister's daughter. And she felt like somebody had disrespected her niece. And she went after the person that disrespected her niece. And she felt like her sister should have done that. I mean, it was just ugly. It was really, in one sense, none of her business. But she got involved in that kind of a way. And her sister needed to set some boundaries. No, I'm going to raise my daughter. I'm going to deal with these issues, not you. I mean, in one sense, what kind of message does that send to your child that my aunt will take my part, but my mother will not take my part? The second would be this, blended families in terms of care and discipline. We live in a culture where many people get married a second time, and they do so because they, you know, those are their circumstances. But what oftentimes happens is then that you have one parent with a set of kids and another parent with a set of kids who move into the same house. And it can be crazy sometimes. Sometimes it can be very good. So when I was a youth minister, I'm still on the blended families, Don, or Bobby, yeah, thanks. So I had a family whose last name was Scheffner. And there was this contentious divorce. And it was sort of, it was like a town like Beaver, but sort of isolated, and so everybody knew everybody else. And so the Scheffners had this contentious divorce. She, Mrs. Scheffner, fell in love with another guy named Schaffner. Now, I don't know why people do these things, you know. But somehow, you know, when we were sending, you know, stuff home, they wanted us to make the distinction right away, the difference between Scheffners and Schaffners, right? But they blended these two families. So he brought his kids, she brought her kids. And for a while there were real issues about who disciplines whom and what the policies are and why this one was allowed to get away with that and that one was allowed to get away. It was a mess. And so before people ever get married, if you're divorced and you want to get married, before you ever have that, you have to have a clear understanding about what each of your roles are going to be. And your kids have to have a clear understanding about who gets to discipline and how they're going to discipline. You need to have that discussion very, very clearly. Because I can just tell you, it can just be a wasteland emotionally for children who are trying to figure that thing out. So, what's that?
Is that the whole reason why there is a biblical ideal is because you get into so many tangles as soon as you get away from, you know, when you have mixed families and all that different thing going on, just look at the complications that brings into your life.
Well, yeah. Now, look, there are a lot of people out there who get divorced and I want to be clear about this because we have some people in here who've been divorced.
I know
you're not, but I want to make sure. I just want to make sure, okay, that we're clear about it. And sometimes through no fault of their own, that's what happened. Sometimes it's a situation where there's a widow or widower, and they have children, right? But you know, you love the person, but can that person love your kids? Because if they can't love your kids, then they don't really love you. And so that's a good reason why, you know, these biblical mandates are in place is because it's to guard and to protect. Look, I'm just telling you, if you want to correct the culture, if you want to correct society, you got to begin with the kids. Now, I was doing missions work in Chicago. And we were working in a public housing plan that had both blacks and whites living there. And I was working with a pastor. And he was telling me all the stuff that was going on in that public housing place that was massive. And the issues were huge, huge in Chicago. And I was saying, how do you fix this? He said, look, he says, I've been here long enough. You just got to write it off and you got to begin with the kids. If you don't change what's going on in the lives of the kids so that they begin a new tradition, a new legacy. He said, these people, in most cases, they're already fixed. There's very little that can be done with them. But we've got to salvage the kids in order to establish a new tradition. That's what he said. That's how important kids are. Yep.
Now where it's not so much about the kids, it's what I want. I want a relationship. I want it at almost at all costs. You know, and the children are the second thought.
Yeah.
When you're speaking, I was thinking of my own grandmother. She had 9 children, carrying one. My grandfather died in the cotton fields of Mississippi of a heart attack, and she purposefully did not remarry because she did not trust another man with her daughters. She just purposely, you know, made that sacrifice that I will not take a risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that that's almost unheard of today.
You don't,
you know, who would want maybe say you're saying so a woman with 9 children, but, you know, as the children got older, they took care of the family. They all kind of looked out for each other. But there are choices that you can make to, in that child's favor, in your children's favor, that I will purposefully put my children first.
Yep.
Before my needs or desires.
Yep. I just think that as a rule of thumb, that's true. I mean, and that doesn't mean then that your kids get everything. It doesn't mean then that, you know, that they become little gods to you. It doesn't mean that. It just means that if you know sort of what the biblical principles are, in terms of raising a child so that they are healthy and productive and secure and all that kind of stuff, that's where our energies have to be bent towards. And there are any number of people in this room who have suffered grievously in their lives because your parents didn't do that. Or one of your parents didn't do that.
Pastor.
I've talked with a number of you in which that's the case. Yes, Candy. Yes.
So you choose to have a child, you know what you're going to need to do to raise that child in a healthy environment.
Exactly. And somebody says, well, can I say it this bluntly? Well, I was just choosing to have sex. Exactly. Okay? Because when you choose to do that, you run the risk of getting pregnant. You just do. And if you run the risk of getting pregnant, then you have to be prepared for the consequences that come from that. Look, again, let me just go back to this earlier metaphor that I used again, okay? I'm just saying, if you're in an emergency room and you want the care of a doctor in your life, and you don't want him being distracted because you want your life to be salvaged from where it is at that point, then how is being a parent any different than that? He chose to be a doctor. She chose to be a doctor. That's their job. We, you know, I mean, that's what happens. And so, so there's this really kind of weird thing in our culture where on one hand, kids are often thrown away. And on the other hand, to the extreme, we make them little gods. We can't really seem to find that balance between those two things. And we have got to find that balance. This church has to exhibit that kind of a balance. We've got to speak this kind of biblical truth in the lives of people so that they have a model to follow. Because it's not there. In terms of... let me just say this because I'm going over, but I just want to at least cover these two, and then I'm going to pick this up again next week. In second marriages of adults with children, things need to be equitable, and this is where the adult parents need to honor their children. So when my mother, her father died when she was 16. Her mother remained unmarried for a while, and then she married a man named Clayton. Clayton married my mother's mother, and that was his third marriage. All his other wives died. You know, nowadays they'd be looking at that, right? So, in any case, my grandmother died, and Clayton never passed on to my mother or to her brother any of the family heirlooms, anything. She lost everything. Any kind of memory of her mother in that way, she never got. So I'm saying this, that if there's a second marriage and you have children, you need to do due diligence and honor your children. Should something happen to you or to your husband, what needs to be passed on to the children of your side of the marriage? Because it can be extremely hurtful and people will never forget. So I was just talking with somebody the other day and they just mentioned this, that both they and their wife, their both he and she brought some means into the marriage, some financial resources, etc. And they said, well, we just, in this way, we signed a prenuptial contract in our marriage because, so that my kids got what I wanted them to have from my side of the family and her kids would get what her kids. Sounds strange, sounds goofy, I know, but in today's world, maybe there's some wisdom in that. Finally, the role of the state and government in the raising of children. I'm telling you, there are people today in places of political authority who believe that the state can do a better job than you at raising your kids. And they want to be able to control any number of things about your values, about what. So let me just say this. There are increasingly a number of government adoption agencies and even private ones that will not adopt children out to Christian families. There are any number of government institutions that do adoptions, as well as private ones, that will not adopt children out to Christian families. They consider the Christian home to be too toxic and too destructive. I'm not embellishing. I'm telling you the truth. So increasingly the government, and you sort of understand this. You can understand this to a certain degree, because when you look at what goes on in much of our culture, sort of like the welfare culture, some of the inner city or whatever, we have people who are just, my brother works in a trailer court where there's a woman that had 12 children to 12 different men. And so the government says, well, look, if we're going to provide all this stuff, then we're going to get to say what happens when you get all that stuff. And so there's this thought then that parents don't know what's best for their kids, but the government does. And just as sure as I'm standing here, I'm telling you that deeper and deeper into the future we get, the more and more that's going to become an issue within our culture. They want to be able to say what your values ought to be. So there are all kinds of court battles across the country that are being fought about what can be taught to kids and what. Do you want your third or fourth grader to be educated on the LGBTQ issues? But I'm telling you that that's happening in the school systems across the country because they think your children need to know that now. Right? So that's why I'm saying the traditional family, the nuclear family as is defined by Scripture, all of that, okay, is very much at risk. And we have to, as Christians and as a church, be very diligent about how we understand this and how we apply it to our lives. I'm looking at Josh and Amanda over here. You're engaged. And I'm assuming that you want children down the road someday. Bev thinks you ought to have a lot, okay? So I'm just saying, okay?
We're waiting like
10
years.
You're waiting 10 years, yeah. Famous last words, but just be careful the water you drink. That's all I got to say. But what I want to say to you is that you're beginning your life early on. And all the stuff I'm saying to you applies. More so to you maybe in some ways than anybody else in this room. And so you have, if these things are highly treasured, children, honor, respect, relationships, family, if they are highly treasured as they should be, then they should be highly protected and cared for. You can't have something really, really, really valuable and assume that other people will take care of what you consider to be really, really, really valuable. You have to do that. Nobody else will do that for you.